The opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management.
Hi, Peter Scheinfeld here, rocking at night every Friday night at 11 p.m. on WRCA Watertown, Boston.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome aboard. It's another edition of Tube Talk.
Give me 5 minutes more, only 5 minutes more. Let me stay in your arms. Here am I begging for only 5 minutes more, only 5 minutes more of your charm. All week long I dreamed about our sad Saturday day. Don't you know that Sunday morning you can sleep late? Give me 5 minutes more, only 5 minutes more. Let me stay in your arms.
Tex Pankey, my name is Paul Bjerisch. Welcome to Tube Talk, right here on WRCA 1330 AM. And we're streaming online on the WRCA 1330 website. Thanks for tuning in. This is the top, as Cole Porter might say, of the independently produced, fine AM radio experience. Which is why we say that when you tune in each week at 10 p.m. Eastern, you have reached the zenith of the fine radio experience.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. I get your kicks on Route 66. It winds from Chicago to L.A. More than 2,000 miles all the way. Get your kicks on Route 66. Now you go through St. Louis, Joplin, Missouri, and Oklahoma City. Looks mighty pretty. You'll see Amarillo, Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona. Don't forget Winona, Kingman, Barstow, San Bernardino. Won't you get hip to this timely tip? When you make that California trip, get your kicks on Route 66.
Nat King Cole, and that's by request to a very regular listener and good supporter of the program. Well, you know, we started off the show tonight with some Tex Beneke, and that may beg the question amongst some of the younger radio enthusiasts out there, or just those who aren't into the entertainment end of the great age of radio as much as some of us are. So we need to answer this question: who was Tex Beneke? Well, let me tell you. Gordon Lee Beneke was born in Fort Worth, Texas, 1914. He was playing the soprano sax as a kid, and as he got a little bit older, he took up tenor sax. And in his teens, he was even touring with a small band and played in some other bands in his local area. In 1936, he was hired by Ben Young for his well-known Texas Orchestra and played a part in the celebration of the centennial of the state, which was celebrated in 1936. Texas gained its independence from Mexico in 1836, so he's cutting his musical teeth. And in musical circles, Beneke had come to the attention of Gene Krupa, who may be a familiar name, and Krupa recommended him to Glenn Miller, and Miller mostly thought of Beneke as a fine sax player, but it was really as a singer that he became very well known during his tenure with Glenn Miller, singing on big super deluxe hits like Kalamazoo, Zoo Zoo, Chattanooga Choo Choo, and Jukebox Saturday Night. Beneke was seen in some movies as well, and in some ways kind of became the face, maybe a little bit more of a personality in the Glenn Miller band. He was in Sun Valley Serenade, and I believe there was another movie that he made, Orchestra Wives, and you'd see him there. So he's kind of a good-looking guy, dapper, sort of dignified looking, very typical of the times. And when Glenn Miller went off into the army, Tex toured with Marion Hutton, and not that much longer than Miller went into the army, he went into the Navy, Mr. Beneke, and he directed two Navy dance bands. And, you know, Glenn Miller disappears mysteriously during the war, and Tex was asked to lead the new Glenn Miller Orchestra, which was a big group by that point in time. It had strings and French horns, and it was large, very profitable, but even though Miller was gone, Tex was still under his shadow. Tex later left the orchestra, feeling it was time for him and the band to move on. But, you know, he stuck with a familiar format in the Miller band and certainly traded a bit on his days with Miller as he performed his own career. And, you know, he certainly helped keep the magic and good vibe created by Glenn Miller alive, and he enhanced our musical heritage even as he soldiered on his own with his different musical ventures. And ladies and gentlemen, we bring you some more Tex Beneke. That's the Tex Beneke Orchestra / Glenn Miller. And that's his interpretation of Moonlight Serenade.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, by now we're getting a bit used to winter. We're like soldiers in the middle of a campaign, growing hardened to discomfort and better able to take it, and looking with longing toward the day when the war is won and there'll be plenty of everything again, including that good Olga Kohl. But like good soldiers, we can't afford to let down now that victory is in sight. We must work harder than ever to get every bit of heat from the coal we get, make it go further, and use less. We must figuratively tighten the belts on our coal bins and wade into old man winter with a little less fuel and a little more heat from every ton. That can help make Hitler's ghost walk.
This one here is from Joe Stafford, and just to show you, we have a little sense of humor here, and so did she. She was a very versatile vocalist, beautiful voice, and really even excelled doing some almost a little comedy
Ross
routine
the
here.
Bowl, and here we go. Oh, tell me, will you, darling, why you look so bad tonight? There's bags around your eyeballs, which is red instead of white.
Well, it were this way. You came when I was alone. Shucks, I should have known that you was temptation. I don't know what I sang on the opening, but it was pretty frantic.
Tim.
I swear, Jim, I said it. Tim. Tim. That you, temptation.
Stand by. Get all rolling in here.
Rosin on the bow, and here we go.
Oh, tell me, will you, darling, why you look so bad tonight? There's bags around your eyeballs, which is red instead of white.
Well, if for this away you came when I was alone, shucks, I should've known that you was temptation. You smiled a leering me on, my heart is plumb gone, 'cause you was temptation. Bored to be kissed, I couldn't resist, 'cause you was temptation and I was
a mosquito, darling.
That's how you tempted me.
And as corn liquor tempts a drunkard, as sorghum tempts a bee, as a willow tree tempts a caterpillar, darling.
That's how you tempted me. You came when I was alone. Shucks, I should have known that you was temptation. You smiled a little neon. My heart is plumb gone, 'cause you was temptation. I couldn't resist, 'cause you was temptation and I was yours. Here's my heart, take it away. Yes, take it away and say that we will never, never, never part. I'm just a slave, just a bad burned slave. I'm a-going with you, 'cause you're a temptation and I'm a red hot flame.
Hot cinder.
Well, here's something that's a little bit more familiar sounding from Joe Stafford.
Pretty, pretty ribbons, lovely, lovely ribbons, scarlet ribbons for her hair.
I peeked in to say goodnight, and then I heard my baby's prayer. Scarlet ribbons, scarlet ribbons. were closed and shuttered, all the streets were dark and bare. In our town, no scarlet ribbons, not one ribbon for her hair.
Not a single ribbon for her hair.
Through the night, my heart was aching just before the dawn was breaking. I peeked in and on her bed in gay profusion lie. There, lovely ribbons, scarlet ribbons, scarlet ribbons for her hair. If I live to be 200, I will never know from where came those lovely scarlet ribbons, scarlet ribbons for her hair.
Pretty, pretty ribbons, lovely, lovely ribbons,
scarlet.
Beautiful song, beautifully sung by Joe Stafford. We are joined tonight by a very special guest who was referred to us by a listener. This fellow is so well thought of by his peers, he was recommended as an interesting guest to spend some time with here in the radio parlor. X-Ray is his handle, and Bill is his real name, and Radio is his game. He joined us all the way from Puerto Rico today, so just welcome aboard, X-Ray. Glad to have you on.
Hi, good evening. How are you?
We're doing pretty good here, and you know, X-Ray is a great handle, you know, so to speak, for those who remember the CB radio days. How did you pick up X-Ray? Did you just come up with that one out of the blue?
Well, my original PM call sign was WB4SXX, and they started calling me X-Ray then.
I see.
That was a nickname, and then when I upgraded, I ended up with WX4A. Which kept on the X-Ray tradition.
Well, I tell you what, I kind of like that, and it's kind of like a little James Bondish, you know, it's like secret spy, super-duper stuff. I like that stuff. Anyway, so obviously you're interested in radio. You have a neat website under the Spark Bench, and I saw an awful lot of interesting sets there. So how long ago was it when you finally, you know, that you can remember when you first got interested in radios?
I've always been interested. I got my ham license back when I was a teenager, and have always loved to mess around, tinker, and whatnot. And old radios have always kind of fascinated me. That's partly economical, because back when I was a kid, you could get an old radio for, you know, a couple of dollars.
Sure.
And have a lot of fun with it, fix it. And it's just something that kind of stuck with me over the years, so I still do it.
Now, how many do you have on the Spark Bench and up on the shelves, on the walls? What do you think you got in your collection right now?
Number-wise, it'd be hard to say.
Ballpark. Just give us a guesstimate.
Yeah, maybe, let's say 50. Well, a lot of the ones on the website have been sold over the years, and then there's newer ones that I haven't ever put on the website for one reason or another, so maybe 50.
Well, I tell you what, there were a few, and I don't know if you remember these from when you were working on them, but there were some that I saw on your site that kind of stuck in my mind. One was you had the RCA 28X, which you refer to as a sleeper, and I have one of those, and that's a, you know, an 8-tube AC-DC, but it's got this very unusual 9-inch long speaker in there, and that was a real good-sounding set. How was that one a tough job to get that one back and running?
My particular one was. It was in pretty rough shape. Had to do the whole drill of replacing the rubber wiring. I recall I had a audio transformer bad in that one. Funny story on that particular one. I sent it to a friend of mine in California. Not as a gift, but as, you know, he was interested in SWLing and that type of radio, and I sent it to him. hey, here, try this one. And he never sent it back. He loved it so much.
Well, I guess that's
so,
a...
Okay, well, it's your radio now. It's, but it's a very good radio. You don't normally find radios of that you want in a small cabinet.
Yeah, you know, it almost had sort of a console sound for a small set. And another one that I noticed on there, you had this big Stromberg Carlson, an 1121, and you were saying that one would chase you out of the room if you turned the volume up too much. But that looked like a nice set, and some of the inside shots you had of it, the build quality on that looked really good as well. Was that your only Stromberg, or did you have any others of those?
I've had others, but not quite as grand as that one. That particular chassis was very common right after the war, 1946 or so. Stromberg had a lot of console radios, different shapes and sizes and cabinet configurations that use that same chassis. And these are the type of things that nowadays people don't really love. Because they're big and bulky, Stromberg Carlson did build heavy radios. But this particular one is unusual because it's that same console radio in a tabletop cabinet.
Yeah.
Which is quite unusual. You don't see many of them.
Yeah, you know, and the nice thing about those Strombergs were, in some cases, they were very easy to service. I have a console model, and they had designed... It almost looked like handles for the chassis, but what it really was, it was a set of metal bars that came up and made an L shape and then came down on the other side of the chassis. And a fellow in my club said, oh, he said, that's not really for a handle. He said, that's so the serviceman could pull the knobs, take the chassis out, lie it down on its side, and he wouldn't, you know, have to worry about any of the tubes hitting the table, or it was for ease of service. And, you know, I look at that and I say, wow, you know, that's a pretty interesting thing, you know, that they were thinking that far ahead to make life even easier for a serviceman. And who even has a serviceman anymore for modern electronics? So, anyway, do you have a favorite brand? I know I bumped into you on the Philco forum. Is Philco your favorite, or do you have a brand, or does it really depend on the set that gets you interested in one?
I'd say it depends on the set more than anything else. I do like the RCAs. I find the RCAs of that era to be well-built, easy to work on, pretty much trouble-free. You go through, fix them up, and you have a good radio. There's so many nice radios from the 30s out there. It's really hard to say one's better than the best, but they're all fun to work on.
Yeah, and, you know, especially when you get them playing, and, you know, sometimes you'll find something that's a store brand radio or, you know, a Silvertone. I think you'd mentioned another Silvertone, a 1581 that was a 4-band, 10-tube set, and you said, you know, that was one of your daily listeners, and you really liked that set. You said it was very hot on the shortwave, and it kind of surprised you when you finally got that one going with its performance.
Yeah, quite often that is the case. You get one, and it just sounds exceptionally good for one reason or another, whether it be reception quality or audio quality. So there's really no end to it. You know, it's not like you can say, well, I want one of those because I hear that's the best radio. Because there's just too many to ever list. And you always end up with a few dogs in the process.
Yep. You know, I always look at it. It's a very personal thing, and I think that's what makes the hobby kind of fun. So, you know, one man's treasure chest is another man's, you know, nightmare. Especially if you never quite get it back to where you want it to be, and it was an awful lot of time and effort to go into it, you kind of say, eh, well, I don't know about that one. Maybe it wasn't as hot as it should have been. Then if you're lucky enough to bump into somebody who did it and just got it to come out just perfectly right, you say, wow, you know, I mean, maybe I need to go back to the bench on that one and put in a little bit more time.
Yeah,
so
that's very true. I've done second rounds in a lot of my restorations. Got them working and thought they sounded pretty good, but then you think, well, you know, this one should do a lot better than it's doing, and then you go through it again and again and again. Maybe you stumble on something that you missed the first time. It's interesting.
Well, hey, you know what we're going to do is we talked about doing this, and I haven't really done anything like this on the show before. We usually focus on brands and manufacturers and different sets and talk a lot about antennas and boat anchors and radio types, lots of different topics, but we've never really kind of talked about the theory, and so we're going to do radio class 101. And just for the listeners, X-Ray is going to be the professor. Paul is going to be the student with the dunce cap, sitting on the stool in the corner, just hoping, you know, to make some kind of sense out of the whole thing, and hope I can get by the final exam. So, you know, sometimes we refer to the All-American Five a lot, and if anybody goes out and goes to flea markets and secondhand stores and yard sales and the like, there were millions upon millions upon millions of very standard five-tube radios that were manufactured at lower prices to get radio in every room in your house, and so the masses could get to radio, because radio could be a little expensive in the late 20s, early 30s. So it's called the All-American Five because it had a five-tube lineup, and a lot of these are AC-DC, meaning they had no transformer. But the five-tube setup worked pretty good, and in some cases you'll find something that sounds pretty good and is pretty sensitive as well. But the All-American Five is your basic super heterodyne, is what we say in the radio game. So why don't we start, Bill, if we could. You know, we pick up a signal with the antenna, and on a lot of these All-American Fives, especially just around the 40s, they started to get internal antennas. So, you know, you see your antenna in the back of your set, mounted on some cardboard or masonite, and the first tube we run into in the first stage of the signal modifying process, I guess would say, would be the 12SA7, the converter mixer. And what happens there once we pick up the signal from the antenna and we get it into the converter?
Okay, in that circuit, the first tube, if it's a true All-American Five, the first tube actually does two functions. It takes the signal that's coming in from the loop antenna, and I need to point out here that the loop antenna is a specific component in the circuit. It's not just an antenna wire coiled up into an oval-shaped thing stuck in the back panel. It's actually a specific inductance that is tuned by the radio to the station that you want to hear. All right, that signal goes into the tube, and another section of the tube at the same time is generating what is called a local oscillator frequency. And in the classic All-American Five circuit, the local oscillator is like a separate little signal source, a transmitter, if you will, that transmits 455 kilohertz higher than the internal or the incoming signal. And in that very same tube, the incoming signal plus this little miniature transmitter are mixed together, and as a product of the mixing process, the output from that tube is at 455 kilohertz, and that's referred to as the intermediate frequency.
And then the intermediate frequency is going to go off to the IF amplifier stage, I would guess, and that's usually a 12SK7. And what goes on in that one?
Yeah, it simply gets amplified at that stage. The beauty of the circuit is that regardless of what frequency you're tuned to, the actual amplification is happening at the same frequency no matter where you turn the dial. And that was such a big improvement over the older radios, to where, well, sensitivity is better on one end of the band, selectivity is better on the other end of the band, and that type of thing. Once they developed the super heterodyne circuit, all of the amplification became the same, so that in theory and pretty much in practice, the radio works as well at 1500 on the dial as it does at 600. Because everything has been reduced down to that common denominator, the IF frequency.
And this is all the part of the genius of Edwin Armstrong. You know, we get off the topic here a little bit. Armstrong is credited with conceiving this theory, isn't he?
Yes. There were others. When you go back in history, you find a lot of people inventing the same thing at the same time.
But, sure.
He certainly deserves the lion's share of the credit for putting it into practice.
So then we go off to the detector, correct? Is that our next stop here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that extracts the audio from a modulated carrier and amplifies the signal to drive the audio output tube. So we're almost at the speaker, huh?
Yeah, the detector itself is essentially a one-frequency receiver. It's receiving a 455 kilohertz signal, and it detects it with a diode, just like a crystal radio detects a signal with a diode. But it does it at that one particular frequency. And there's a couple other things going on. It generates automatic volume control for the preceding stages of the radio, the same IF amp and mixer. Get benefit of some automatic volume control voltage. And in the AA5 circuit, there's also an audio amplifier. The triode part of the detector tube. The detector actually has a couple of diodes in it, plus a triode audio amp. And that's where your volume control is. Your volume control is between the detector and that initial audio amplifier. So it does, there's a lot going on there on the detector tube. It's a simple circuit, just like a crystal radio is a simple circuit, but that's what's going on in that tube.
Yeah, and you know the automatic volume control portion of that really helps keep the volume level of a particular station in line with all the others. So for anybody who ever had an older set that is a little bit more simple and didn't have an AVC component in there, you know, you ever listen to those sets, you know, you go from a strong local station, it almost busts your eardrums, and then you find something that's a little bit weaker and it drops way down, and you have to fiddle a little bit with the volume control to get it back up. So that was a nice feature, even in a very simple setup like that, that you don't have to worry about having these big jumps and drops in the volume when you're tuning around there. So anyway, we've gone from the 12SA7 to the 12SK7 to the 12SQ7. Then it's on to the 50L6, which is the audio output, and that gets the signal into the speaker, right?
Exactly. It's where the audio amplifying power is actually developed. Capable of putting out, I don't know what a 50L6 will do, maybe a couple watts in the best world, but in a typical AA5, it might not even be a watt. Might be like 0.8, you know, something like that, watts output. And that's where all that, where you actually get the sound from. You can hear the signal at the grid of the 50L6, but not enough to drive a speaker. And it just amplifies it up to speaker level.
Now, you know, the other thing, too, is we don't want to forget the fifth tube in the whole equation here would be the rectifier, which is charged with getting the current to the right level from your household outlet to light up your tubes in series there so that you can get the desired effect out of them all. And in most of your standard All-American 5s, that would be a 35Z5.
Yeah, it's called a half-wave rectifier, and it basically takes your household voltage, converts it from AC to DC because you need DC to power the circuits of the radio. And it does that job.
Yeah, and you know, it's so anybody who's ever out, you know, and they're looking around at an old secondhand store or a radio flea market, you know, you can tell a little bit about a set just by, you know, you peek in the back. If it has an antenna that you can see on a little piece of masonite or some cardboard there, and you count and you see five tubes and you don't see a black thing that looks like a power transformer, chances are you've got yourself an EC-DC AA5. Is that a pretty safe bet?
Odds, that's what it'll be.
And, you know, just for those who wonder, you know, when we look at the voltages on the tubes, if you add the 312s up and the 50 and the 35, oh, I don't know, what's my, I don't do math in my head very good. What do you get, like 120, 121, something like that?
Yeah. the filaments of the tube are wired in series, just like the old Christmas light bulbs. And there's, you've got your 312-volt tubes, the 12SK7, the 12SQ7, the 12SA7. So there's 36 volts there. You've got the 50L6 output tube, so there's 50 volts there. That brings us up to, what, 62? And then we've got the 35Z5 rectifier, which adds 35 volts to that string. And conveniently, and of course this was by design, this isn't something that somebody just discovered. They actually designed these tubes for this purpose. If you add them all together in series, you come pretty close to normal 120-volt house voltage. So they can run in a series string like that without any sort of transformer or voltage changing. The downside, if you want to call it a downside, is that if any one tube burns out, then the whole set could have been.
Right, right. And the other thing is, you know, in a lot of cases with these types of radios, the chassis itself is what they say hot. You know, it can be conductive. So, you know, there are instances when, you know, somebody might have a broken knob or touch the chassis, so, you know, get a little bit of a zap out of the whole thing. So these require a certain degree of care. And as we talk about on the show, if you ever run into any old radio, but especially a transformerless set, you want to make sure to have it serviced by somebody who knows what they're doing, a competent repairman. Please don't go home and plug it in. Please don't go home and try to service it yourself if you're not a trained radio expert from the Sprayberry Academy, because you know you don't want to light yourself up as well as the tube. So find someone who knows what to do to help you out with it, and a good source for that is usually at your local antique radio club. You know, the whole thing, even though it's a very basic setup, is sort of a marvel, and it did get radio, you know, it created this explosion of radio, and the advertising grew and the programming grew, and everything really kind of took off when these little sets came out, because it became possible, especially during the Depression, for somebody who didn't have a lot of bucks to get a radio.
Yeah, that's very true. Back in the Depression years, they hadn't quite standardized on the internal loop antenna and some of the tubes being used. But it was, I guess, kind of a normal course of development of the circuit. Everybody was building radios. Everybody was looking for cheaper cost, and they all kind of converged on what turns out to be, like what you're saying, what we call the All-American Five. That was where it all wound up.
Yeah, and it does serve as sort of a base for a lot of other sets. You know, some tubes, sometimes you'll run into a set that they add a tube and you get an extra RF stage, or you get, you know, to enhance the sensitivity of your radio a little bit. So you'll see a lot of things that are sort of built around the whole AA5. You know, there's all these little variants that are built, and, you know, it went on. I mean, they were building them that way right up to the very end of building tube radios here in the U.S., so obviously it worked, and it worked pretty well, and it was a good idea for them to get the costs down and to keep the radios rolling out of the production line so that they could, you know, keep doing their thing, because consoles and larger tabletop radios, as people's lifestyles changed and they really tried to mass market them, some people couldn't afford it or they didn't have a place to put it. And as more and more radio stations popped up with stronger signals and strong locals, it was easier to get them on your basic set. And you know, it's some people kind of put up their nose and say, oh, well, it's just a little five-tuber, but it does deserve its place, I guess, in radio history. So, I don't know, X-Ray, how do we do in class? Were we good students?
I think so. I'll give you a pass.
Give me a pass. All right, well, I'll remember that, and I'll look for my diploma coming in the mail. So, anyway, it's been great for you to be on the show. I appreciate you coming on. Check out the Spark Bench. Do you have the web address in your head, or if you just Google up Spark Bench, you should come across it, I would think.
Yeah, if you Google Spark Bench or simply sparkbench.com, you'll wind up there. A lot of that is my old projects I've put together over the years. There's not much I've done recently on there, simply because I just haven't really dedicated much time to the website. And then there's a whole other section on there that's my homebrew radios. And there's a link on the main page that takes to the homebrew stuff.
Yeah.
I kind of drifted off into homebrewing as part of the hobby. I like building things and, you know, building something from scratch and actually seeing it work. So,
yeah, I mean, that's
pretty excited about doing that.
Yeah, and that really gets back to the basic days, you know, the golden days and the 20s, when people were, you know, more almost experimenters than consumers. You know, if they were into radio, there was, you know, you had to have a little technical skill and you had to troubleshoot your problems, and you might not have had as many radio repair resources at your beck and call, so you had to be a little bit of your own technician. And a lot of old-timers especially said that's really where the fun was, because you could get involved with it yourself. So, hey, it's all good stuff, and you can check it out on the Spark Bench. X-Ray, thanks a bunch for being on. We appreciate it. You have a great night.
My pleasure, Paul.
Take care now. Bye-bye. For those of you aficionados out there who might be able to tell the subtle differences, that was the Glenn Miller version, Moonlight Serenade, from 1939, and a little different from the one we heard earlier with Tex Beneke, sort of a compare and contrast. They're both great pieces of music. And by the way, X-Ray, thanks again for the lesson. You can be the resident professor of theory. Thanks for being on. Thanks for joining us tonight here on Tube Talk. We are the Analog Avengers. We're so glad you tuned in. Let me just remind you the email address for the program if you'd like to reach us here. Questions, comments, reactions, suggestions for guests. TubeTalk1 at gmail.com. That's TubeTalk, the number one, at gmail.com. And now a word from our sponsor.
Now, after all is said and done, it's Palisade for having fun. So during the day or when it's dark, visit this great amusement park. Palisade Amusement Park. Skip the bother and skip the fuss. Take a public service bus. Public service sure is great. It takes you right up to the gate.
Yes, folks, public service buses now take you direct to America's greatest amusement value, Palisades Amusement Park. Buses marked Route 98 leave New York every 10 minutes from 167th Street on Broadway, and also from all points in New Jersey. This year, Palisades Amusement Park is bigger and better than ever before, with more than 130 thrilling rides and attractions, a new enlarged kiddie playground, and the world's largest outdoor saltwater pool for healthful, relaxing surf bathing. And there's always free shows and free dancing.
Skip the bother and skip the fuss. Take a public service bus. Let's get ready now on your mark to Palisades Amusement Park. Palisades Amusement Park.
Don't forget to get the bus. Well, here's a piece we hope will please everybody as we coast into the horizon this evening. This is Joe Stafford and Johnny Mercer.
It's great
to be alive,
to work
from 9 to 5,
to have
a piece of land to farm.
It's great
to be alive,
to have
a car to drive,
and have your baby on your arm. In spite of bills and other minor ills,
somehow we manage to survive.
It's great
to be in love,
to have
a roof above,
and watch the little ones arise.
Your own descendant,
deductible dependents. It's great to be alive. It's great to be here and kick,
to
hear an alarm clock tick. It's really a kick to cultivate chickens on little old farm.
It's
something to work and strive, then take your girl to a drive
and swing,
to know that at 5 you're really alive, and she'll be holding your arm.
It's great
that gal to love,
to have
that roof above,
to watch,
especially with the little ones arriving, and all that jive.
Your own descendants, deductible dependents.
It's great, it's great to be to be alive.
It is great to be alive, especially with music like that for background music. This is Tube Talk, bringing you incisive interviews, fascinating discussion, quality, dignified music from the greatest era of radio. Tex Beneke and Joe Stafford sort of in the spotlight here tonight. And here's a little something for you. Some Julie London. My heart belongs to Daddy.
While tearing off a game of golf, I may make a play for the caddy. But if I do, I don't follow through, 'cause my heart belongs to Daddy. If I invite a boy some night to dine on my fine Finn and Hattie, I just adore his asking for more, 'cause my heart belongs to Daddy. Yes, my heart belongs to Daddy. Yes, I simply couldn't be bad. Yes, my heart belongs to Daddy. Da 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 da.
So I want to warn you, laddie, though I know you're perfectly swell, that my heart belongs to daddy, 'cause my daddy treats me so well. While tearing off a game of golf, I may make a play for the caddy, but if I do, I don't follow through, 'cause my heart belongs to daddy. If I invite a boy some night to dine on my fine fin and laddie, I just adore his asking for more, but my heart belongs to daddy. Yes, my heart belongs to daddy, and I simply couldn't be bad. Yes, my heart belongs to daddy. Da 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 da. So I want to warn you, laddie, though I know you're perfectly swell, that my heart belongs to daddy, and my daddy, he treats me so well.
Julie London, a.k.a. Dixie McCall. And for those of you who can only remember Julie London in that nurse's outfit, looking sort of sanitized and very professional, I would tell you to go hop online and do an image search and look at the sultry, swinging, singing Julie London, and you'll find a very different visage awaiting you. This is Tube Talk. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate you turning the dial to 1330 AM, picking us up over the net on the WRCA website. Thanks again for listening. Good night, all.
Dancing in the dark till the tune ends. We're dancing in the dark, and it soon ends. We're waltzing in the wonder of why we're here. Time hurries by, we're here and we're gone, looking for the light of a new love to brighten up the night. I have you, love, we can face the music together. What though love is old, what though song is old, through them we can be young. Hear this heart of mine, wailing all the time. Dear one, tell me that we're for the light of a new love to brighten up the night. I have you, love, and we can face the music together.